MoneyWeb Now, on the money.
MoneyWeb Now, brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Chatting now with Mohammed Nahla. You find him at monose.com, moe-nose.com. And I thought I'd get Mohammed on for my hard question of the week, modern monetary theory. Mohammed, appreciate your time. I want to give you my sort of synopsis, and we can see how right our modern monetary theory, in essence, it's the idea that countries that issue their own currencies never run out of money because they can print it. You know, a business or a person literally can. A country can never run out of money. And whilst in one sense that's a terrifying idea, and Zimbabwe springs to mind, there is a school of thought that's been growing over the couple of years that says this maybe isn't the worst idea.
Yeah, thanks, Simon. Always a pleasure to chat to you and to the listeners. Modern monetary theory, despite the name, you know, it says modern monetary theory. People think it's a new thing. It's actually something that's been around, certainly in academic circles, since the 1970s. I think your synopsis is spot on. It's basically saying for countries that can control their own money supply, effectively print their own currencies, you know, why shouldn't they do that? And instead of looking at focusing on policy measures like inflation control, that has really become kind of, I guess, the de facto norm over the course of the last several decades, MMT or modern monetary theory suggests that we should actually rather aim for full employment. How do you go about doing that? Well, it's a combination of both, you know, monetary stimulus and then that playing hand in hand with something like fiscal stimulus, and that sends all of this into the real economy. And their approach is very different in that instead of using interest rates as your primary policy lever to try and control inflation, they say, yes, when we eventually do reach full employment, yes, inflation might start to come through and start to become a problem. At that point in time in the future, theoretically, they should then look at taxes as the lever to actually then start to curtail expenditure from the private sector. And that starts to take some of the steam off any inflation problem that you might get in the longer term. So that's in a nutshell, that's the theory. As you correctly state, you know, people start seeing these images of a Zimbabwe or a Venezuela, hyperinflation, even further back, you look at Weimar Republic, Germany. That's really the fear that grounds the world in an inflation targeting type of a framework. But for countries like the United States, where you've got this exorbitant privilege, you've got the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency with tons of demand. I mean, I don't see demand for the U.S. dollar disappearing overnight. That theory may just work over a period of time. And it's something that I think is actually being tested as we speak right now.
And you mentioned taxes. And taxes, in a sense, if we start getting inflation, the typical central banker raises interest rates. And that sort of sucks the money out of the economy. And if you raise taxes, you get the same sort of impact. You suck money out of the economy, except, of course, that money then goes to government, who can then put it sort of back into the economy as and when needed. And I suppose, you know, when inflation starts to moderate again.
Yeah, so that money would either flow back into the economy or alternately, again, as the theory would hold, is that the government at that point in time could utilize some of these exceptional tax revenues to repay some of the debt. And then, you know, once inflation cools off again, they can look at ramping up the debt again to re-inject that money into the economy. So instead of using interest rates as the price of money and, I guess, the transmission mechanism to prices that the consumer would eventually pay, this would look at taxation and debt control on the other side as your primary levers to that macroeconomic policy. It's very much, you know, it turns the way the world has been run on its head quite a bit. The reason why I say it might actually be with us as we speak is, bear in mind, you know, following the pandemic, we've had almost an uncanny cooperation, certainly in the U.S., and I wouldn't necessarily say it's explicit, but you've got the Fed that's really keeping easy monetary policy going. But then at the same time, you've got massive stimulus checks being doled out by the U.S. Treasury. That, because remember, you know, if the Fed controls the price of money, they don't have the direct mechanism to inject that into the economy. It's got to go through the banking system and so forth. If you go from the U.S. Treasury side, side. They can literally mail you a check, because that's how things are done here in North America, no EFTs, but they will mail you a check. And once that money hits your account, you're free to go out and spend that. So the ability for it to drop through into the real economy is arguably a lot greater in that kind of a scenario. And because of the pandemic, we've had both of those levers churning. I saw an interesting stat the other day that says something like 60% of all base money, all base US dollars that have been created, have been done so over the last 2 years. Now, I haven't validated that yet. And again, it ignores all of the kind of money created in the financial system. But that is a staggering statistic, which may also explain why we've seen so much activity come through in terms of the cryptocurrency market as well.
And you mentioned the idea of sort of sending money directly to people, and we do that kind of in South Africa with our social grants on a much different scale, and aimed at a sort of certain demographic of the economy. But you know, we've seen some retailer updates coming through, you know, looking better. We saw GDP looking, you know, it was ugly, but it looked better than anticipated. Minister Mboweni found an extra 100 billion in tax collections, and that's that ability to get money directly into the economy. And sure, some of it gets saved, some of it goes into Bitcoin, but a bunch of it just gets spent and circulates in the economy.
Yeah, I think you raise a very important point, Simon, is that, you know, South Africans seem to think that, you know, there's some degree of austerity when it comes to the South African policy framework. But if you look at it, money is the cheapest it's been in South Africa pretty much ever, you know, in a post-pandemic world. So that's the central bank keeping the price of money relatively cheap. Then you correctly say that on the fiscal side, it's actually been a very expansionary budget. Yes, we've got a pandemic going, but even pre the pandemic, South Africa has a reasonably large component of its expenditure from a fiscal side that goes into a social safety net. And those two levers effectively then translate into a large buildup of debt on the sovereign's balance sheet. So that's what you've been seeing. I think for me, the caution for a country like a South Africa, any emerging market effectively, is that your currency is not the US dollar.
Yes.
So your currency would very much be reliant on what does global appetite look like for emerging market debt. Thankfully, South Africa continues to remain one of the favorites. If you speak to any emerging markets manager out there, you know, we've got fairly high interest rates in South Africa relative to some other emerging markets, and that makes holding South African government bonds relatively attractive. And then they obviously manage to hedge their currency risk out on a more dynamic basis. But bear in mind, if that dynamic shifts, if demand for South African debt starts to get eroded, if we go into a global risk-off type of environment, those are all potential vulnerabilities which might just upset the apple cart of what you could effectively call pseudo-MMT that has been in existence in South Africa as well.
Yeah, and that currency is a real risk. It's you know, Iran's been sort of strengthening a bit recently, but you know, we're still, you know, around the 14-15 rand level. And obviously we're an economy. Yes, commodities are doing great. That's helping us on the export side, but we import a lot, and we import oil as a significant use in our economy. We import a lot of manufactured goods. So and that could be a significant risk in the process. If our rand blew out to 20. Suddenly, we could start importing some inflation, and there's debate around whether we would or wouldn't, but assuming that we do, we start importing inflation, then we start raising taxes, and then we're in a whole heap of trouble.
Yeah, and on that point of raising taxes, I mean, Simon, the way you've outlined it is 100% correct. South Africa also is a country where taxes are relatively higher than they are in other parts of the world. And a simple example would be, for example, corporate taxes are higher than you'd find in the rest of the world. Personal income taxes are a bit higher. Maybe VAT is a little bit lower. But the ability for South Africa to levy additional taxes on what looks like a fairly thin taxpayer base does also become another risk should that chain of events actually play out. And that's why, you know, well and good if the US, for example, experiments with MMT. They have the ability to do so, whether there are adverse consequences. And even in the US, for example, if you look at the US 10-year yield, that has started to tick higher as the world, as markets digest this. So you've got that US 10-year that is now at the highest it's been over the last 12 months. You've got inflation expectations and break-even yields in the US that have also ratcheted up and now above 2%. And it's all well and good because the Fed says, you know, they can tolerate slightly higher inflation. Remember, if their inflation is at around 2% and so forth, that narrowing inflation differential between the US and South Africa is also one of the beneficial factors, I guess, that have kept the rand reasonably resilient. But if that starts to get unstuck, obviously an emerging market, specifically a high beta emerging market like South Africa, will always have some of those idiosyncratic vulnerabilities.
And to conclude, I mean, we are in a sense, you know, tongue in cheek, thanks to the pandemic, we're trying this experiment, and we're trying it in the U.S., the world's largest economy, with the U.S. dollar as the most in-demand currency there. It's something which, you know, in the years ahead, and not even this year or next year, but in, you know, maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years, we're actually going to have an on-the-ground pseudo-experiment which we can look back at to a degree and get a sense of, you know, how did the modern monetary theory pan out? What flaws were there potentially?
Yes, and I mean, it's good. I guess, you know, when the experiment happens in the world's largest economy, those impacts flow through to the rest of the world. It's something that I certainly am keeping a very close eye on. And again, as you mentioned, you know, at the start, you know, people can go and check me out on my website, monos.com, or follow me on Twitter, which is at Mohammed Nallah. Mm-hmm. And as I see these things developing, you know, Simon, I'm going to comment on them as well. It's scary simply because I think markets are trying to digest what this means. No one really knows, either from an academic perspective, or even from a market's perspective. We're feeling this out, and let's hope it doesn't all end in tears. But for me, you know, coming from a classic basis, the rise in debt levels is something that certainly needs to be watched. We don't want the world to necessarily turn into a Japan once again.
Yeah, and that's we'll save Japan for another whole scenario, because certainly there are risks. This is not a risk-free scenario. It looks lovely from the outside. It works perhaps in the U.S. The rest of the world we need to see, and Japan is always that sort of that risk in the corner of the room. Mohammed Nallah at monos.com, and of course Mohammed Nallah on Twitter. So really appreciate your time.
This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider with license number 50483.